Before we get started with this week's episode, we'd like to remind you folks that the Air Raid podcast is available at many places, including iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Adore.fm, and ChiroRadio.com, and wherever else podcasts are available. Let's get started with the show. Hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 299 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Yes, indeed, folks, we've got a great show planned for you this week, albeit a little late. Arwin Nix, professional radio person. He's worked on, many NPR station, or public radio station. She currently resides here in Seattle, Washington. Just won two Edward R. Murrow Awards for excellence in broadcasting. I believe she won those for editing a certain story that she did. And she is now co-host of the all-new Sub Pop Records podcast that you can find at subpop.fm. And it is a fantastic show. I was a little nervous about having Arwin on here because, of course, she is kind of my competition. But we met a couple months ago while we were both on this panel discussing making, you know, professional podcasts and making them work in front of a group of students at the UW. I was drawn to her a little bit because, first of all, she's very cool. And second of all, she's into the same stuff that I'm into, man. And so we had a great conversation. It turned out to be an awesome conversation. She is an absolute wonderful person, and she's got some great stories to tell, man. Especially about her first ever assignment that she was given by herself at a radio station down in L.A. And the story that she tried to get, we'll get into that a little bit later in the show. But stick around for that story because it is not only terrifying, but very, I don't know, darkly funny. Okay, can we say that? Okay, yes. This show is going up late. My wife and I, my beautiful wife, Mairead, and I celebrated our 9th year of marriage yesterday. And nothing real special, but, you know, I wanted to take some time off and just be with my family and stuff. And to answer a couple of emails, no, I am not dead. And I am not sick. We are still dealing with the family, health issue stuff, and, we're almost out of the woods on that. So we'll be back to a regular schedule, hopefully, middle of next month, maybe July or something like that, but we're still kind of dealing with stuff over here. So after this episode, after 299, we are going to take a few weeks off just to kind of recoup and be with family and get some stuff in order, especially because we still need to get some stuff in order for episode 300 as well. Okay, so that's a big thing, man. So yes, to all the emails that emailed me and asked me if I was dead, no, I'm still around, man. But thank you for your concern. Yes. Let's see, what else was I going to hit on here? I can't remember. It's fairly early in the morning, so I'm having a little bit of trouble. Oh, this is what I was gonna say. So I went to Facebook the other day in Generation X slash millennial fashion. I posted a, you know, happy anniversary message to my wife on Facebook because that's what you do now. And made a pretty big gaffe. I had the date right, but I did not have the year of the anniversary right. I thought it was 7 years, and I posted this nice little thing about, you know, my wife and I celebrating our 7th year of marital bliss. And Mairead, my lovely wife, posted in the comments of that, that I'm, you know, she was proud of me for getting the date right, but no, honey, it's been 9 years. So, that was kind of funny. A lot of people seem to like that. And, much to my embarrassment, but I left it up because I am a man and I take responsibility for my gaffes. All right. There, a little story to share before we get into this week's episode. We're going to be featuring music this week by the band The Coat Hangers, which I urge you to check out. Please go to thecoathangers.com, check it out. They're on tour right now in support of their new album, which is out as well, called Nosebleed Weekend, and it is fantastic. They're on Suicide Squeeze Records. We talked a little bit about them with David Dickinson a couple episodes ago. So I urge you to go and check that out as well. They're on tour, like I said. They'll be at the Fillmore on May 26th, San Francisco, California. 27th at the Fonda in Los Angeles, California. The Glass House, Pomona, California. At Solana Beach, California, at Belly Up. Rialto Theater, Tucson, Arizona, May 31st. Sunshine Theater, June 1st. Albuquerque, New Mexico, and the list goes on and on. They're going to be here up here in Seattle. Let's see. When is that? Seattle, Washington, at the Suicide Squeeze 20th Anniversary Party, August 25th. And I believe that's at Numo's. Let's see here. At Numo's, the 25th and the 26th. Suicide Squeeze is celebrating their 20th year anniversary. If you remember, if you listened to that episode with David Dickinson, the guy that started Suicide Squeeze, man, what a fantastic story. So on the August 25th, Thursday, August 25th at Numo's, they're going to have The Coat Hangers, Guantanamo Baywatch, Childbirth, and Audacity. And then on the 26th, Friday, at the Neptune Theater, they're going to be celebrating the 20th year anniversary with Minus the Bear, This Will Destroy You, Six Part Seven, Michael Now, and plus more special guests. So get your tickets now. Go to suicidesqueezerecords.com. Okay? All right. So this one, The Coat Hangers, off of their new album, Nosebleed Weekend. Let's go with this. This is called Make It Right. This is such a wonderful song. And we'll be back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears with special guests this week, Arwen Nix, professional radio person, which made me a little nervous. I didn't know what to do. We had a great conversation, though. All right. The Coat Hangers, Make It Right, off of Nosebleed Weekend. Go get this record. Highly, highly recommended. All right? Okay. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us. You think so?
I think so. I don't, unless,
is that
like,
how this works?
Have you brought me to your house to kill me?
Well, I haven't showed you the murder bathroom yet.
No.
Yeah.
No, you haven't yet. Oh, goodness.
Yeah, it's right behind that door.
Crossed. Great. Yeah, That does look like a murder door.
It kind of looks like a murder door, right? Yeah. That's a source of much conversation when people come back here.
Like a Mr. Ed door?
It's like, it's like a barn door.
No, but they have a special name.
Barn door.
Mm. You think that's it?
I think so.
There might be another one in addition to that special name.
Yeah, okay, yeah. But the toilet, or not the toilet, but the bathroom right behind this door is very, very small. The ceilings are very low. Sean Nelson has had to use that bathroom
on a
number of occasions. And it's funny to watch him walk through the threshold. Yeah,
hunched
all
down.
Hunched over. Yeah, yeah, it's pretty entertaining. Arwen Nix joining me here in the backyard for the intro of this episode. How are you doing?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Your studio is fucking beautiful.
Isn't this cool?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, the closet that I am working out of at Sub Pop is not as big as, like, your desk area. And I just, like, pull people in there and I'm like, I swear, I'm not here to waterboard you.
It's like a place you cannot fart.
No. Or one could, but should not.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Dare not. Dare not pass gas in the murder closet.
Arwen, co-host of the all-new Sub Pop podcast, which is absolutely fantastic.
Thank you.
And makes me extremely jealous.
No.
Come on. Yeah, it does.
Oh.
I am that person.
Okay. Well, let's talk about that for a minute.
Should we?
Yeah.
Should we get into it?
Let's talk
That's
about
why I asked
how
if
much
we should,
you
if
love
should...
the podcast I make and how great it is and why you're jealous.
Well, why I'm jealous.
What
let's
are your
start
favorite
there.
Things about it?
I like the way you do it. I like the way you, you do it like an NPR show. Like, it's storytelling, man.
Mm-hmm.
And it's obvious to me that you've had a lot, many years of experience doing that kind of show as well.
I have a few, yeah.
Yeah. See, all I do is I get people back here and I just bullshit with them for an hour. But you actually go take the time to, like, edit.
I do that and then
cut
so
the
much
bad
more.
Parts out.
Yeah. Well, not to the bad parts. Sometimes I leave the bad parts in. No, but we do, like, we edit it heavily. Like, I'll talk to someone for, like, you were telling me you just listened to the Kyle Thomas episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Tough. So, like, I went to LA and walked back into his, like, terrifying, like, Charles Manson-y neighborhood house. Like, beautiful, but, like, kind of creepy.
Yeah.
And a lot of long-haired dudes, no shirts, no shoes. And I just sat down with him and he gave me a cup of coffee and we talked for, I don't know, at least an hour, maybe two.
Yeah.
And then I cut that down to like 11 minutes or something.
Was it only 11 minutes?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And it was just like, and then, you know, mixing in the music, maybe it got up.
Doesn't
to
that
like
ever
12
hurt
13.
Though? Like sometimes, cause like I do
Always
editing
hurts.
Here as well. Yeah. And it's like, oh, I really like that part though. But
yeah.
Like if you're trying to make time or something like that, then you like, it's, something's gotta.
I mean, I feel like so,
come out,
so
right?
many different times in my career, there have been interviews that I've done where I've had to cut my favorite parts
mm-hmm.
because I have to make time and I have to get the information out there because I come from news.
Sure.
And so like, you know, maybe like what they fucking got for breakfast is the most interesting part of the interview, but it's not like the news peg,
yeah.
which I left news for a lot of reasons. And that's one, because I don't give a shit about the news peg a lot of the time.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
I care about the person who's
What's
talking
to
me.
What's the news peg? Let's for people who don't know,
so the news,
including myself.
Oh my God. So it's gotta have a news peg. It's gotta have a hook is what you're going to hear in like a morning
right.
editorial meeting.
Sure.
And it's like, so let's say the news peg is that lead was found in the water of a school in Tacoma. That happened
yes.
recently. Like the
yes.
news came out that happened in May and we just found out about it. So that's the news peg. You want to talk to the newsmaker. You want to talk to the person who's going to initiate change. So let's say it's like the superintendent of that school. You're
okay.
already fucking bored.
No,
right?
I'm not. I'm actually thinking about writing this down.
Okay. So you get the superintendent.
It's like I'm taking my own class right now.
You get the superintendent on the line and then you ask them like, when was this discovered? What's the normal process? Why didn't we know this sooner? What are
yeah.
you going to do to fix it? And all these things. And that's the news, right?
Sure.
But then maybe your sixth question is like, well, what do you have a kid in the Tacoma
oh,
school
yeah.
district?
See, that's
then,
good. That's a,
then you start getting into that. And
yeah.
they're like, well, I don't. Like, well, do you have any children? And they're like, No, I've never had children. And in fact, I'm sterile. And I got into being a superintendent because I wanted to be around kids and I couldn't have kids. And I was afraid of fostering kids because I have a terrifying fear of commitment.
And that's the part you cut out, right?
Yeah. And then you get into all that shit, which is interesting. And yes, you want to know about all that stuff. You want the headline.
Yeah.
But like, I want to know what the fuck is below the fold of everybody's story.
Sure.
And so and that's the thing that I really like about doing the Sub Pop podcast and the show that I was working on before on KPLU, which was a fucking dream of an experience, because you get on those shows, you get to like show who the person is.
Right.
And sometimes the best way to do that isn't by saying like, so you make music.
Yeah.
How'd you start doing that? Sometimes it's like, so you're obsessed with raccoons. Let's talk about that for a minute. You know,
that's I love person. It, man. That's why I started this show too.
Yeah.
That's why it went down the road that it has.
I'm really curious about your trajectory because you're a geologist, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I am.
So what the fuck is this about? you really
want to know?
I do.
Am.
Yeah. Yeah. Why are you doing
so,
this?
Okay. Well, I was in a band for years and years since college. And I needed a place to put my creative energy when that kind of fizzled out. And I was like, oh, I know all these cool people doing cool shit from from the sciences to
a lot of people would just be like, I'll start a new band and me and some other people will play music in my garage once a week.
It was taking, I had a kid on the way. It was taking too long to, you know, and too much money to like pay for like, you know, rental spaces and stuff. And it was getting, at that time, it was getting more and more expensive to find a place to play music. And I just didn't really, you know, I didn't feel it. And it was just like, you know, I kind of realized that I wasn't that great of a player. And I was like, well, I love podcasts. I'm starting to listen to all these podcasts. Why not make my own? I've always been good at talking to people. So why not do that? And I was like, okay, let's do it.
Yeah, but it's fatiguing. You and I both know how fatiguing the work can be sometimes.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
The producing, the scheduling, getting people like when they don't show up and you don't know what you're going to do, feeling like you made something really fucking excellent. And then you look and you're like, nobody listened to that.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's heartbreaking.
Oh, sure.
But you keep doing it.
Yeah, because
you've been doing this for a long time.
Fuck.
So
it is so fun.
What's the fun part?
The fun part is meeting my musical heroes and getting that, the reverse news peg, out of them. Like you and I met, what, a couple months ago?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Doing the chat at the UW.
Yes.
For kids who wanted to start, or students, I should say. Young adults who wanted to get started
Not
in the podcasting
young.
Game.
People, yeah, there was adults of all ages.
That's true.
Yeah.
And I was telling you, you and I were talking about having Ishmael Butler on this show, of Shabazz Palaces and formerly of Diggable Planets. And I was really nervous for that one. And so you and I were just kind of riffing on, like, you were about to do that one. You were a little bit nervous as well. And
still hasn't happened. Still nervous.
Okay. But it turned out really, really great. And so we kind of bonded over that a little bit, but that's what I really like is
God,
like meeting
so
these guys
good.
And, you know, and ladies and getting to the heart of who they are and having a good interview with them, like having a good chat, something that you can put out there and be like, this is the real person, not the person that you hear about in like Rolling Stone or Glamour magazine.
Yeah.
You know, this is the actual person making the art that you like and love so much. So that's that's always
so then
interesting.
You get it. You get that like sometimes the best story is someone getting stuck in traffic on the way here.
Sure.
And feeling frantic and then just like going, just talking to you about
that
and how that feels.
When we talked about that at that class too, and I mentioned, and I probably didn't put it into such great words during that class because I was nervous as hell, like sitting up in front of those people, like trying to tell them about my show, sitting amongst people who have been professionals in the realm of like podcasting and journalism and radio, and like giving my two cents on what makes a good interview. Like that just made,
I can guarantee that you were the only one of the four of us up there that has any sort of setup that looks like this. I promise.
It's taken a long time. It's taken a long time and a lot of donations to the podcast to get here.
Let's
By the way, donate to the show.
Yeah, donate. Donate to Air Aid.
That's one thing I need to learn more about. More about to do. That's not right.
So here's how you do it. Let me tell you what they would tell you if you were doing a pledge drive.
Yeah, yeah.
Case and then close. If you're listening to this podcast right now, you've probably been listening for a while, and not everyone is going to give when they listen. It's not something that you think about, but you're listening right now, which means that you care enough to listen. I don't bother you so much that you're turning this off right now. If this is true, if this is ringing true at all for you, yes, you, listening with your headphones, you should be doing something else. You're not. You're avoiding it. You're listening. You're hanging out with me. Then donate right now. Go to airaid.net and hit donate. It's that
it's
easy.
Actually, it's actually air-raid.net. That's another thing that kind of screws me
You're not
over.
Making it easy for
no,
people.
No. There's a hyphen in there.
Yeah. The case is like, here's an emotional pull. Say the word you like 8 times and then tell people where to donate. Do that within 30 seconds. Do it 3 times.
There you go. You've done this before.
I have so many pledge drives.
Do you hate it? Is that a soul-sucking part of doing actual radio?
I hate the first few days.
Uh-huh.
But I love the last few days of a pledge drive.
Because it just gets wacky?
Because people have lost their shit. They are not making sense.
Right,
it's the only time anyone working in public radio gets anything for free. Like, people donate bagels and stuff. And we're also, hungry and make such little money that we're just, stuffing bagels and drinking sodas and, talking about the stupidest stuff. Not even making sense. And nobody cares.
Right. Yeah.
And it's hilarious.
So where did this all start for you? You have been in radio for a long time, right?
Yeah,
How many years? How many years in radio?
Seven years? Okay. 7, maybe 8. Yeah.
Yeah. Straight out of college?
Oh, no. I dropped out of all the colleges.
You did?
Yeah. 7 colleges.
7 colleges?
Yeah.
You dropped out of 7 colleges?
I dropped out of 7 colleges 10 times. Because some colleges I kept going back to.
What the fuck?
And I was like, no, not for
hold
me.
On. Hold yeah. on. Okay. Let's start with college number 1. Where was that?
College number 1. Let's see if I can think back that far. That must have been Scottsdale Community College.
Okay.
The Fighting Artichoke is the mascot.
The Fighting Artichoke. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh.
And then it was I went to ASU for a course for a summer.
Did you grow up in Arizona?
I did, in LA till I was 9, and then in Phoenix.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Scottsdale Community College, ASU, U of A, until they found out that I didn't have my vaccinations or something. And then I was like, oh, fuck that. So I dropped out. And then Pima Community College.
You didn't want vaccinations?
I didn't want to have to deal with paperwork.
Ah, okay.
And I think it was just that
a woman after my own heart.
I went to 4 high schools also. So this is a pattern that goes pretty far back. But I think that somewhere along the way, I realized that the traditional model of education is not something that works for me.
Yeah.
I can't handle being in a room with a bunch of people fucking trying that hard and all trying to absorb the same thing. I just need to be by myself and read a fucking book and just do it on my own, which is why I love podcasts.
Uh-huh.
It's because I can just listen and absorb the information and then bother my girlfriend at dinner and be like, oh, guess what I learned today? And then, tell it. And that's how I'll end up retaining it.
Yeah.
And then there was, up here I went to, I feel like I'm leaving some out, but I know I went to Seattle Central a few times.
Uh-huh.
And then most recently, the last college I dropped out of was Antioch.
So did you ever take journalism? What?
No.
No.
No, I've never taken a journalism course.
So did you jump around major to major, or did you even have an idea of what
I was a creative writing major at first.
Okay.
When I was living in Phoenix, I was
That seems to fit.
Yeah, I was writing and putting on plays. And that was just because I loved eavesdropping. I loved conversations.
Yeah.
And so I was I'll just write these conversations and
put
them out. So I did that for a while, and I loved that. But then I had taken all the creative writing courses you could take. And then at that point, I had just moved to Seattle, and I had enrolled at Seattle Central. And they were like, you don't need any more of these credits.
You have to take your math courses and something else,
Well, and I had taken all these math courses
Oh, okay.
because I love math. And
you love math?
I love math. I love it. And so they were like, well, the only way you can take more math classes is if you say that you're going to declare as a math major when you transfer. And I was like, sure, fuck it, whatever. This doesn't matter. I'll be a math major.
Okay.
And then I took a bunch of math classes.
Like, what kind of math? How far up did you go up the chain of that? Shit show.
I don't know. High? Like...
Did you get into like physics and stuff like that?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah. I love that stuff. God. I mean, that was like, you know, more than a decade ago that I took a math class.
Okay.
But
yeah.
It was, I mean, it's math is really soothing to me because I'm super type A.
Okay.
So like when I first moved to Seattle, I didn't know anybody here.
Yeah.
I just like, I'm your standard, like, I loved Nirvana. I'm going to move to Seattle. And so I drove up here and got a job delivering pizzas. And that was, you know, 12 years ago or something.
But so it was really just because of the music that you moved up here?
I moved up here because it seemed like a place where something could happen.
Okay.
And Phoenix is a desert where things go to die. people.
Yeah.
Life. Anything. companies. But so...
Lizards are the only thing that live.
Yeah. And despite what any of my exes may say, I am not cold-blooded. That is not for me. So, but when I moved up here, I would just like sit at the old Bauhaus with like a math book that I bought from Half Price Books. And I would just like do math problems in the morning because it was like, really soothing to me.
No kidding.
Yeah.
God, I always hated math.
Really?
Yeah. And I was never good at it either, which is weird that I got a geology degree.
Yeah.
Because I had to go, I mean, you know, do the calculus round, and then for physics I had to go all the way up to thermodynamics.
Oh, I never got that far.
And it was just like quantum mechanics, thermodynamics, not great, not good stuff for me.
No?
Yeah. It was tough.
Yes, but you have, you know, this like domain, you are kingdom of this world of rocks that like I do not understand at all.
Yeah, it's more dirt now though.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So do you work with like David Montgomery and like those people?
No.
Okay.
No.
But yeah, so it was all those colleges, and then I was like part of the Pike Pine Mafia, like had worked at Hot Mamas and Bauhaus and these different places. You know, went to the Cha-Cha every night and the Redwood every night.
Yeah.
And, you know, hadn't like, that sounds shitty to say, I'm not going to say that, but, I got a lot of free drinks and it was really easy and it felt too easy. And I just felt like this is so comfortable and I'm just like drinking at work when I feel like it and doing whatever I want. And like, I have no parents, no rules. But then I was 25 and I was like, well, what the fuck am I doing though? Am I going to be sitting on the same bar stool for the rest of my life? And like the company I was keeping, they were sitting on those bar stools with me, but they did shit. You know, they were in bands. They had stuff going. They had projects and I didn't. I made coffee and then I drank all the whiskey.
Yeah.
And so one night,
was it becoming a problem?
Like
the drinking?
I mean, in hindsight, yes.
Yeah.
But I didn't feel like it was a problem at the time. I felt
like
it was a party. But I did know that I needed to do something different.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what that was going to be. And my friend Sean Kelly, who actually used to work at Sub Pop, I met him when I was working at Top Pot Donuts on Fifth Avenue. He and this guy that I was dating that worked at Sub Pop like 11 years ago, they used to come in and I would drop donuts and get nervous. And
Oh,
cute people. But Sean and I became very dear friends, and he'd been living in LA for a while, and he was looking for an intern for this production company he was working at.
Yeah.
And he was like, he was just calling me to like vent. And he was like, I just wish you could live here and just like be the intern. And then like, you could just like work with me. And I was like, okay, I'll be there in a month. And I just packed up everything and drove down to LA, and my sixth day in Los Angeles, that company folded.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Really?
Like, yeah. It was my fourth day at work. I still didn't like know exactly what I was doing. I'd written like maybe 5 lines of copy. And
what was the job description that you were supposed to be doing down there?
It was hard to describe. I think that, you know, maybe that's why the company folded. But yeah.
They were making these really cool music videos
oh, and viral videos and like political commercials and all this like really awesome stuff. Like really great creative minds. But it was, you know, right when the bottom dropped out of the economy. And it was just like really, really hard. And so I had just like left this stability, this easy drinking stability with all of my favorite people that I had met that lived here to go to the city that I fucking hated.
Yeah.
And then that happened and I didn't know what to do. And so I was just kind of wandering and, you know, spending the savings that I had. And
were you scared?
I was despondent. Yeah. Like I was embarrassed and I wasn't.
Did you have some sort of safety net that you could like attach yourself to a little bit? Like were your parents like,
I could move back to my dad's house in Phoenix. Yeah, like he would never say no to me, but that would break my heart. You know, I mean, I love my dad. He's my very best friend. Hi dad. But I think that it would have just been really soul crushing to me. And I knew, I knew I wanted to work in radio. I'd known that since I was 17, but I didn't know how. And then at like this party that this production company threw, when I was like at a really dark fucking point,
like a blowing up party.
Yeah, pretty much like this fucking like blow up party. Totally. Like they had this event planned or whatever. So they were like, we're just going to do this. I went and there was this guy who was a producer for Marketplace at the time. And I got his email address and I just like harassed him for a couple months via email until he finally met me for a cup of coffee. And he was so kind and generous and listened to me talk about how much I love radio and why it matters and driveway moments and blah, 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 all that bullshit.
Yeah.
And then he introduced me to two women who were working in radio and was like, I'm going to pass your information along to these women. And if they need anyone to help, I'm going to recommend you because I think that you could be a really good intern for somebody. And I was like, okay, thank you. And like 2 days later, I got a phone call.
And that was still down in LA.
That was down in LA. That was at KPCC. And this woman, Amy Machado, called me. And she was so fucking busy. She was such like a ball-busting, badass woman that she was like, I don't have time to interview you or look at a resume. You come in, start working tomorrow. We'll see how it goes. We'll see if you like us and if we like you and we'll go from there. And so I just like slid under the radar. And then I had been there working as like an intern and then fill-in producer.
Yeah.
For like a year before someone was like, so you didn't graduate college? And I was like, nope, I fooled you. Like, that was, you know, like I had never said that I did. I never lied about it.
Yeah.
But I definitely had so much fear and anxiety about
that.
Yeah. Because everyone like went to fucking Reed or Oberlin if they work in public radio.
Sure.
And I was like, I've gone to Scottsdale Community College, home of the fighting artichokes. And like, that was all I had, but I knew that I loved it and I knew I was fucking good at it because I knew that I was going to do anything to stay there.
Yeah.
And so that, then I just worked my way up. I moved back to Seattle because I had a really bad breakup and realized I hated LA and it wasn't worth staying there.
Yeah,
so I stayed for a year out of spite because I wasn't going to let the breakup like win. So I stayed for another year and then literally on the calendar day of 2 years, I was like, I'm fucking out of here. And like moving truck in front of the house back up to Seattle.
What did you hate about LA so much?
I think I was at a bad place.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that it was LA's fault. I think that I loved Seattle so much and I was just still too in love with Seattle that LA was never going to be anything but like a bad idea. It was just like a bad idea rebound.
Yeah. Seattle had become your comfort zone as well.
It had become my home.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the people that I met in like the first few years I was living here are still my best friends. I love them so much.
That's cool, man.
And I love Seattle. I think it's like living in a fucking painting.
It kind of is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you like it here?
I love it here. Well, this is where I grew up.
Oh, it is? You're
here. Yeah. I'm from, born and raised in Washington.
See, that's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I grew up over on across the water from Seattle on the Kitsap Peninsula. And I never saw myself actually living in a big city. Like,
really?
moving to Seattle like scared the shit out of me. Like literally scared the living shit out of me.
What scared you?
It was just too big. Like I grew up in a town called Indianola that was at the time when I was there like maybe by sixth grade, the population had grown to 900.
Wow.
Yeah. And like, and you know, now it's like probably like 3,000. But
I don't think
you know,
I've ever gone
tiny.
To a school that
it
had less than 900 people.
Yeah, I mean, the elementary school that I went to was in Suquamish, which is like almost a half an hour bus ride away, right? So, and it took, Suquamish took, you know, kids from Suquamish, kids from Kingston at the time, or parts of Kingston, kids from parts of Paulsbow, like kids from Indianola, kids from all over the place. You know, it was so small. It was so small. And that was the same story with my junior high, the same story with my high school.
So then why did you move to Seattle?
Because I got a job. I moved up to Bellingham when I graduated. I went to college in a small cow town in Ellensburg, you know, and then moved to Bellingham to be with my now wife and couldn't find a fucking job to save my life up there. And then got this, my first geology position and moved down to Seattle. I found an apartment. My great uncle owned this apartment complex and he let me live in the basement, basically, in this tiny little illegal apartment.
So then you're moving to like bigger city and then bigger city. And when
it was
Seattle,
kind of a gradual,
was it
thing.
As scary as you thought it was going to be?
No, but I still spend most of my time at home. Like I don't like going into the city. I just can't deal with it. Like my brain won't allow for it, you know? So like I'll go to shows sometimes or like to do my show, like I'll go to, you know, to venues and stuff like that and interview people and I'll maybe stick around for the show, but then I'm out.
See,
I'm
I feel the opposite. Like the further I drive away from the city, the more I get into like the suburbs, like my skin starts to crawl. I feel so uncomfortable.
Really?
And I'm like, this is where people get murdered. Like, I can't handle it. And I don't know if it's because I grew up in like the suburbs in Phoenix or what it is, but like I want a dense city that's loud. I got to do this writer's retreat a couple summers ago on Whidbey Island. Best fucking experience. Like, but like that was the first time I'd ever like eaten something off a tree. And I was like,
really?
Yeah. And I was like, is this real? Like, I was freaked out. I'd never had a fig before and it was delicious.
Yeah,
and
they're good.
They were really good. And like this guy Vito just like broke it open and handed me part of it. And I was like, this seems dangerous, but like, I like fucking hitchhike in the city. Like it's no big deal. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
That I got. Yeah. But yeah, I just, and then when I was out there, it was so quiet.
Yeah.
That I couldn't fucking sleep.
Really?
Yeah. It was like, I know what you did last summer, kind of quiet.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it took me a long time to get used to the noise of the city. Like, it took a really long time. You know what we need to do? We need to go to our first musical break. I think this, we're going to turn this into a full episode.
Oh.
So, what do you got on your playlist right now? What are you into?
You know, I've been listening to the Coat Hangers a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They're out on, the new album just came out on Suicide Squeeze. We just had, you talked to him too.
Yeah. Alyssa talked to David. Yeah.
To
we
David?
had him on the show. And
great dude, man.
Yeah.
I was so stoked to meet that guy.
Yeah. He's a dream.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Let's listen to something off of, the new album by the Coat Hangers. What's the album name? Do you know? This is the worst. Like I am the worst at remembering like album names and song or song names.
I feel like that counts for something.
Yeah, I bought it too.
Okay.
So it'll be easy. It's the Coat Hangers. And we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears when we return. With special guest this week, Arwin Nick. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us. because he did a live studio performance here. And I had his the music DI'd into the wrong input. And so he gets halfway through the song, and I have to go, I'm sorry, we got to cut. I didn't record that first half. And he was like, really? Yeah. And I was so embarrassed I couldn't look at him while he sang it over again. And then we came back, and I used that as part of the conversation. I was like, you ever done that? He's like, dude, I've lost full songs before.
Oh, it's so
painful.
Never
getting them back. Like, it's the worst.
Yeah.
That is the worst. And I've done that so many times. You'd think that, like, over the course of, like, 7 years of doing this, that you would, you know where everything is plugged in and know what these things look like over on the...
I know, but that's a testament to, like, having a really good conversation. You're not paying attention to all this other shit. And it's not you and, like, a producer and an engineer who's, like, watching that shit. It's
you
doing all the things.
Yeah.
And sometimes if you're listening...
Thank you,
you're
Arlen.
Not doing the other things.
Thank you.
I get it, man. That shit's fucking
Have
hard.
You ever... What's the worst for you? Like, what have you lost that was just, like, insane?
I'm trying to think. I can't think of a specific one, but I do have a memory of interviewing someone at a hospital.
Oh, no.
About hospice work.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And then losing like half the interview. For me, what's happened more often is my computers over the years, especially working at public radio and having, you know, you have like the most basic stuff because that's what you can afford. It's all listener funded. Mm-hmm. So it's crappy equipment a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And so... You know, you'll record this interview and then go to load it and then the computer dies and it erases everything, which feels worse because it's like it wasn't my mistake. It's like this fucking Lucifer that's living inside my computer that just ate this fucking interview that a woman is talking about like her dying wife or something. And I just like, what am I going to do? Call her back up and be like, can you just come back in and cry?
Exactly. Especially when you get into like in deep with somebody and then all of a sudden you go, you know what? That didn't record. Ugh.
Yeah. You're breaking the interview at that point. You've just
it's
broken
done.
It.
It's done.
Yeah. Rome
I've done
has
that
fallen.
So many times.
It's the fucking worst. I hate that feeling. Yeah.
You know what'd be a great band name?
What?
Hitler is a hard drive.
I am against any band name with Hitler.
With Hitler in it? Doesn't work.
I'm just going to say that.
Doesn't
now.
Work for you?
No.
You don't think Sub Pop would like that?
I am not going to speak for Sub Pop, but if Sub Pop did that, I would not like it. I'll say that.
We are back with Arwen Nix here in the backyard. Thanks for sticking around.
Thank you. I'm having so much fun talking to you.
Oh, good.
I'm glad
good.
We're not enemies.
I'm glad to.
You're not sure yet.
I'm just, I don't know what's inside your head. Like, you know,
you
this could be like we could get done here and you could just walk off and go,
me.
Hitler is a hard drive. Great idea. I'm stealing.
If you play
one.
This interview backwards, I'm just telling people to never listen to Air Raid and just listen to the Sub Pop podcast.
Subliminal messages. Yeah. See, that's how good you are.
All these years.
So we ended the last conversation before the musical break that you had gotten into radio just by kind of.
Moxie
and finagling your way into the studio.
And a lot of
the
like
studio.
Really kind fucking people being willing to take a chance
sure.
on me. Brendan, who was the
Which
guy.
Which is amazing.
It was, I feel so fucking fortunate. Brendan Francis Noonan was the guy who I met with, who was a producer for Marketplace, and he's now the co-host of the Dinner Party Download.
Oh, right. That's where I recognize that name.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he is a fucking great dude and so smart and such a good writer as well. He used to be a travel writer and he was just really nice to me and just like we've stayed like, you know, email colleague friends over the years and now I see him once in a while, but I feel like I owe him so much for just like sending an email to two people being like, hey, take a chance on this girl.
God, and that Dinner Party Download show is phenomenal.
He's so good.
Well.
They're both so good.
I was really stoked to see that actually picked up by, isn't it on, is it APM?
Yeah, it's on APM. It has been for years.
Infinite Guest?
I think so.
Is it on Infinite Guest? Yeah. with our mutual friend Luke Burbank mm-hmm. and Andrew Walsh.
Well, I would feel
the TBTL.
I feel like it would be going too far to say that Luke is a friend.
Luke,
I would hope to be friends with someday. I've met him a few times, but I wouldn't say that we know each other well enough to be friends.
We're going up to his 40th birthday.
You are
up on Lummi Island. You would hate it.
What? Why?
Because it's out in the middle of nowhere.
No, but if there's water, then it's great.
Oh, if there's water, then it's okay.
Yeah, that's the exception.
Fucking Arwen.
I love the water so much. That's why, like, we just got back from Mexico, and we went on this trip that I was not excited to go on.
Really? Why
yeah.
not?
I was just like, we were traveling with a big group of people, and I can't handle that. It's just like...
Why? Just because, like, there needs to be, like, plans and stuff like that for, like, everybody, what
everyone
everybody
has,
gets together and
everyone
does,
has
what?
Their expectations sure. of what their yeah. vacation is going to be like.
Yeah.
And, like... No offense, but like two middle fucking fingers to your expectations. This is my vacation. And luck. So I was just really nervous about it.
Yeah,
I get kind
yeah.
of anxious about that kind of stuff. And Jen is phenomenally patient with me with it. And we went and she was right and I was wrong and everyone was super chill and it was great. And we all yeah. just did our own thing and it was wonderful.
See, that's key right there.
Yeah.
Because what I expect to have on a vacation is like doing nothing.
Yeah.
Like I've been on vacation or been on like, you know, traveling trips some other people. I spent like a month down in South America in Venezuela when I graduated college, and it was always like bam, 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 because I was with like a seasoned traveler, right? He wanted to see everything, and I was just like, man, I just want to lay on the beach,
dude.
Like, that's what I want to do.
I want to read a Stephen King book.
There you go,
in like a beautiful place.
Yeah,
like. I want to read something that I can just like fall into. And then every time I look up, just be like amazed, astonished by what I'm around.
Sure. Sure.
I'm not going to fucking go hike and look at something.
Right.
That's not for me. It's my vacation.
Yeah. Especially in a tropical area where it's like super hot and you got to carry like 18 water bottles with you.
No.
That makes no sense. Mm-mm. Why would you do that?
I will never put myself in a situation where I have to carry more than one water bottle.
Yeah. I'd never want to put myself in malaria's
way. But that's how
way.
I feel in the suburbs. Like, you need a lot of water bottles out here. What's going to happen?
Where's the store?
Where's the mom and pop shop that's actually owned by Starbucks that I can pretend is my neighborhood store?
That's right. That's right. So how did the Sub Pop podcast come up? How did that all come to be?
That all came to be... I was working at KPLU at the time, which is the third radio station I worked at. And my friend Sam Sawyer was working at Sub Pop, and he texted me or something and said that him and his friend Alyssa, who I knew Alyssa's husband, wanted to meet up and talk about like trying to figure out how to do a podcast for Sub Pop. So I was just like, I met with them a few times, just like over drinks, like hanging out. Like, this is what goes into it. This is what I would do. They're like, what if we do this? I'm like, you could totally do that. I would rather die than listen to that, but you could totally do it. But most of their ideas were really good. It was just a matter of figuring out how to make them happen.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
And, you know, the conversations were like in quick succession at first, and then they kind of petered out. Sam ended up leaving and taking a different job.
So was he originally going to be like a host?
I think it was
going
to be Sam and Alyssa.
Gotcha.
And they were going to do it together. And then Alyssa, like, I sent her a note and I was like, hey, just so you know, if you still want to have these conversations and figure this stuff out, like, it's not just because I'm friends with Sam. Like, I love talking about this shit. Just KPLU is just like 5 blocks away from Sub Pop. So I would just head over there after work and talk to them.
Yeah.
But then those conversations with Alyssa gained a lot of steam. She's the type of person who really makes shit happen, and she really wanted to do this. And so she just, there's nothing more attractive to me with a project than someone who's willing to do shit. So many people talk about things all the time and they have all these great ideas and then nothing happens. It's just like scraps of paper. And I can't handle that shit.
It seems to happen in this type of business a lot.
I think so. I think, like, you know, maybe creative types, there's so much going on that you start drowning in your own ideas.
Sure.
But Alyssa wasn't going to let that happen. So she brought in Stuart, who now does the Megamart ads for Sub Pop, who is just a fucking angel. And we started meeting more. We started meeting every Saturday. And then we were like, okay, let's make a proposal to Sub Pop. And at this point, I was still just like helping them out.
Right.
And, you know, I wasn't getting any money for this or anything. I was just like going in there and trying to
Were the
to
talks
make this
to have you no. as a co-host?
No.
It was just like you were kind of on the back
no,
end.
No, I mean,
at
this
point,
like I was, you know, the senior producer of a show that I had built at mm-hmm. KPLU. Like I built sound effect. That was, they wanted to do a show. And with the team there, I was able to like make a show that I was so fucking proud of. And yeah. It was really, really hard work. It's really hard to make a show happen, make a weekly story like show happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And we had 2.5 people working on it at right. KPLU. It was so fucking difficult, but I loved it so much. And then
that makes me feel really good, by the way, because like I put a lot of effort into getting people back here or just setting stuff up.
Yeah,
we've got a booker now, which actually helps me like actually book the shows, dreamy. which is awesome. She is fantastic. Elliot, if you're listening to this, you are an amazing person.
Good job, Elliot.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, just when you say podcast, even when you say it to me, like, I'm like, yeah, okay. Like you do, you totally. Know, say you're in your mom's basement. Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah. That's great. That's great. Like, it just has this connotation to it that it's just like, all right, hobby project. Cool.
Sure.
But like in my own life and hearing you talk about like doing an actual radio program where it takes a team of people to make this fucking thing happen
yeah.
once a week, it's like, yeah, it's a lot of work.
It's
man.
A lot of fucking work. And I yeah. was working so hard. And then, sure. you know, I really love making shit. So I yeah. was really happy yeah. to be going into Sub Pop on Saturdays, but I was also exhausted. And then we were like, okay, let's come up with this proposal. And then Stuart and Alyssa were like, well, we want to have you like teach us how to do this. Like, yeah, let's have yeah. that be part of the proposal, where it was definitely like a teach a man to fish kind of idea.
Uh-huh.
So like me coming on as a consultant, I was like, okay, here are my boundaries. Like KPLU comes first. I have to do sound effects. That's yeah. my show. That's my right. baby. I will train you how to do this. I'll try and like do like a crash course in interviewing and editing and all these things. We can make 6 episodes over the course of 3 months, since we're only working on Saturdays. And I know that's of course not only going to be Saturdays, but mm-hmm. like let's build this proposal. And then we had the idea, like, instead of just giving this idea, like presenting this idea to the overlords at Sub Pop, like let's fucking make one. Let's do an episode 0.
Yeah.
And so we did a pilot episode, which I think we may or may not, this is like an exclusive for you, we may or may not air that on the Sub Pop podcast. We're
Who
still
is
not
it
sure.
with?
We talked to the artist, Derek Erdman, who's the receptionist
oh, yeah.
at Sub Pop.
Yeah, totally.
He's in it. Corey J. Brewer.
Uh-huh.
We talked to him about his time as the merch bot for the Murder City Devils.
Yeah.
And then we talked to, oh my goodness, what's his name? Alyssa spoke with him. He's just this dreamy guy from, he was in the Shins, and he was talking.
The keyboard player?
Oh, I can't remember his name. Oh, this is killing me. I can hear his voice. Hey, Alyssa, it's me. He left a voicemail. It was so sweet. But he told this story about a former Sub Pop employee streaking yeah. during Shin's concert. And it was
nice.
Just, it was great. But anyway, so that was like, so I was like, let's make this episode. So we played, you know, Megan and Chris this episode, and they sent it to Jonathan. And we're like, here's what we want to do. So yeah, that was the plan. Yeah. The plan was just for the first season. I was just going to consult and then I'm out, because I was like, I have a full-time job. I can only sustain this for like another few months.
Yeah, right.
And then the news came down that KUOW was buying KPLU.
Right.
Like a couple months into this. And so I thought we'd all been told that we were done. We were getting laid off.
Yeah.
Like we'd been eaten up and spit out and that was it. And so then I was just like, what the fuck am I going to do? Am I going to move back to LA? Like, what's going to happen? And I had no idea. And I talked to Alyssa, and she and I worked together, and we worked with Chris, and they were like, okay, let's bring you on. And so January, coming back from like the holiday break, I had my mind made up. I was like, okay, I'm going to go work for Sub Pop.
Yeah.
I'm going to work there 25 hours a week. And then I'm going to make my own show on the side. I'll just do that as like a passion project.
Mm-hmm.
like take a big pay cut from like being the senior producer of this, you know, somewhat successful at this point show, but the station's going away. So what choice do I have? And I right. was loving working with the people at Sub Pop. It was so fun to have these conversations that were so different than the conversations I'd been having for my whole career.
Right. Right.
And so, you know, I told, it was really, really hard. Like I cried, but I told my boss at KPLU and she totally got it because we didn't know what was going to happen. But
right.
Then we got the news that we had the chance as a station to save ourselves, which they're trying to do now. So it was really,
they're still working at that.
Yeah. Yeah. They're past the halfway point in raising money. If you're listening, uh-huh. please donate to KPLU. It's a wonderful station. You should save it. But they're past the halfway point. And if they can make the money, then it'll be a community station.
Oh, that's cool.
And they can survive. But
yeah,
they don't know. We don't know what's going to happen.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's scary. And a lot of people got job offers. And some people left,
uh-huh.
and most people stayed. They were like, okay, I'm going to stay till the end and try and fight the good fight.
God, I just had this like image in my head. Have you seen the movie, The Big Short?
I haven't yet.
You haven't seen that?
No.
There's a scene in that movie where they go and check out like Goldman Sachs, like trading floor.
Yeah.
After everybody is just like, you know, the bottom falls out of the economy. And they go and just walk through and it's just deserted, just completely deserted. And that's what, like, I just had this image in my mind of like KPLU getting bought, the news that they've been bought by another NPR station. And just, it's just like paper floating in the air.
That's what it felt like. It was, we call it, everyone at KPLU calls it Dark Thursday.
Oh man.
And it it was so hard. It was so hard.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was really hard for me because the station buying us was the last station
right.
that I worked at. And now I'm doing work with them again.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's just this complicated world of radio. And
yeah.
like everyone, I don't think there's a bad person at KUOW. I think it's like a business decision and people get affected by those decisions.
Well, that's a weird thing. Like I kind of got, you know, tied into all these radio stations a little early on in my podcasting career.
Yeah.
Which was weird for me because I had always wanted to work in radio. But you know, I never really had the push to do it.
Well, and also like, it's such a weird job that you're like, where the fuck do I start?
Yeah, where do you even, what do you even do for that?
Yeah,
like it's the same thing I thought about geology as well, but after I started getting roped into this and finding more out about how that worked, and like there's really no alliances in the world of radio, especially not like commercial. Like
definitely
one day you'll
commercial.
Turn on the radio and it'll be a different fucking show in the time slot,
yeah.
you know? And it's like, where did that guy go? They don't even talk about it.
Or a different station.
Yeah.
Like
right.
in the dark of night, suddenly yeah. it's like, oh, this is a top 40 station now.
And
when
that
did
is
that happen?
So weird to me. And then you think back throughout your life of listening to radio and you're like, oh yeah, that used to happen all the time.
Yeah.
Like,
it's volatile.
It's weird.
Crazy. But the thing is like, radio is no matter, I don't care what people fucking say, radio is still relevant.
Oh sure.
90%
yeah. Yeah,
over 90% of people still listen to the radio every mm-hmm. week, at least, like at least once a week people are listening to the radio.
Yeah,
like I'm love podcasts, I'm all for podcasts, and
sure.
I think that there's room for both, but it's a scary,
radio will always have a place until Wi-Fi is readily available everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's free.
Yeah, I could say that's true.
Yeah.
But I think because, radio will still have a place then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think so. I think it's probably way further out from going away than what people originally projected.
Yeah.
When podcasts started taking off, you know?
Yeah, it hasn't gone away yet.
This is like, this conversation is so boring to everybody else except for me and
what
you.
Should we talk about that's going to make it less boring for people?
Let's talk about your worst interview.
My worst interview. Oh, goodness. So I think my...
You don't have to name names either.
But... No, I think my worst interview is also my favorite thing that I've ever worked
really?
On. Really? Yeah. So when I was still working at KPCC, I was working... my work wife at the time, who's... I still like to believe she's my work wife, Lauren Osen. She is a fucking badass. But we were interns at the same time. We came in together. She like got there a couple months before me. And... probably like the healthiest relationship I've ever had of any sort really? Was my friendship with Lauren. Cause we waited like we really felt each other out for like 6 or yeah. 8 months
yeah.
and then started slowly working together and hanging out and everything. But it was very slow and steady. Mm-hmm. But when I decided to leave LA, I had like this idea basically to do this swan song of sorts. So I wanted to do this piece on policing practices in Skid Row. Which now that I'm not working on like the kind of shows that I used to, I can say are fucked up. The police in Skid Row are fucked up.
Yeah.
And they are just like ticketing people and it's this fucking debtor's prison. And it's this terrible, terrible thing that is this systematic oppression of these people have been forced to live there. And it's this heavily policed area and it's really scary. And, I didn't know what the fuck I was doing out there. Like, but I was like, let's do this piece on it. So I was like taking tours with the cops. I was doing all these different things. And I always had someone from the community with me.
Yeah.
Until one day I didn't. Until the last day that I was going to be down there. And this is like 3 months that I'd been going down there.
Yeah.
And I'm there with this like very nice, even younger than me, redheaded camera operator who wants to like get footage of Skid Row to put on the website. This mm-hmm. is like a new thing that they're putting footage on the website with news stories. And we are getting screamed at by people. They're like, get the fuck out of here. Because they're tired of reporters. Of like these fucking white kids coming in and documenting their lives. Like, that's fucking fair. Like, they have any idea what we're doing.
Like, there's some sort of, like, attractions in a zoo or something like
and,
that.
And, like, I think that is totally fucking valid to feel that way.
Because,
you know, you're going in there with the intention of being like, well, maybe if I do a story on this, then some attention will, a light will be shown on it. And people can get the services that they need because this is a fucking problem and we're part of the problem.
Yeah.
But, you know,
but I always say at some point it always turns into voyeurism.
Right? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you're always part of the situation. Mm-hmm. And so here I am just like this fucking blonde lady walking through the streets of Skid Row with this fucking ginger with a big camera on him. And this guy who was pretty fucking high on crack, who had like, he was in a wheelchair. He had one leg. He stops us in front of these trash cans.
Yeah.
And he's got these two big dudes behind him and they are just fucking screaming at us and they're going after us. Like I know that I'm going to get beat up at least beat up, if not like sexually assaulted, if not something else. Like these are three dudes, two very large, one just very scary in a wheelchair, who are screaming at us. They're like pulling on Corey's camera. They're trying to take my mic away. Like I am shaking. I don't know what the fuck to do.
And are you like, what did you do? Did you try to pull this stuff back? Like,
I'm not letting go of the mic.
Yeah.
Like I'm not letting go of the mic because I didn't know what to do. And it wasn't my mic. It was the station's.
Were you recording?
At this point? No, I turned it off. The guy was like, don't fucking record me. And I turned it off because I wasn't going to fuck with it.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, Corey had his camera down. And I just didn't know what was going to happen. And then the guy reaches behind him for a gun. And he starts to pull this gun. And I thought I was going to fucking piss myself.
Yeah.
And I was like, you have every right. Like, I was trying to talk my way out of it. And didn't know what I was doing. And then someone walked by. And there's like, these streets are full of people. Like, people are walking by. Nobody cares. Like, there's a lot of other shit that they have to deal with in their own lives.
Whoa.
And so then this other guy walks by who starts screaming at us.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy thinks he's screaming at him. And so it diverts his attention away for a second.
Yeah.
And he's so high that when he like looks at us again, he's kind of forgotten what was about to happen.
What the
and
fuck?
I'm like, hey, I'm going to see Officer Dion Joseph right now, who's like the lead officer on Skid Row. He's the one who does all the patrols. And I'd gotten to know him really well. And I was like, why don't you guys come with me? You're right. Let's go talk to him about all the things that you're saying. Like, you're fucking right. And this guy, he was so high. I do not think that he stands as a representation of the people that live in Skid Row at all.
Sure. Yeah.
But he was fucking scary. And we were able to like kind of talk our way out of it. And then something else distracted him again. And we were just like, okay. And we like walked slowly down the street, past the corner, and then just took off running.
Yeah.
As soon as we could. And like ducked into this place where we were doing an interview later. And my heart was fucking pounding. But
whoa.
The story that we ended up making was an hour of footage from Skid Row and then an hour of this panel that we had a couple weeks later of a bunch of people coming out. And I met amazing people that like live there and did community activism and all these things. Yeah. And what they're doing is so beautiful. And I was so new to radio and editing and reporting that it's just not that good. Like, it's a piece that I was really proud of. Because I had done it and because of that experience and feeling like I was giving voice to people, like giving this like megaphone to people who deserved it and that they were getting more time than the police because they're more of a representation than the police there.
Yeah.
But it's not good. It's not a good fucking hour of radio. It's not good to listen to. It's fucking bad.
With such a backstory. Oh my
and
God.
Like, really incredible. Like I learned so much about the policing practices and that things are illegal in Skid Row that aren't illegal in Santa Monica and that aren't illegal across the street if you're drinking wine in front of your fucking loft.
Wow.
But like, it's fucked up.
Yeah.
But I didn't do a good job representing it because I didn't know what I was doing yet.
Yeah.
I hadn't cut my teeth enough. And so it was just like, it's this thing that I feel really proud of emotionally that like whenever that comes up and I end up telling someone the story of it, they're like, ooh, send me the link. I'm like, oh
yeah,
I will get right on that. Like, I haven't said anything that would give someone the ability to Google it and find it. Cause that's how fucking bad it is.
And that's a testament to how good of a journalist you are as well.
Yes. Like any good journalist, I'm great at hiding the truth.
Exactly. Arwin Nix, thank you so much for coming to the backyard. This has been a real treat.
Yeah.
I hope you enjoyed yourself.
I've had a great time.
Good.
Are we enemies?
I don't think so.
Okay, good.
Yeah. I think that's going by the wayside.
Okay, good. I'm going to use part of this in an episode of the Sub Pop podcast.
That would be great.
Is that all right?
Yeah, totally. Okay, totally. And by the way, we didn't get to this part, but congratulations on your two Edward R. Murrow Awards.
I was the editor. Those pieces were those. All the credit should go to the reporter of those pieces. Absolutely. Kyle and Gabe Spitzer. Those are the people that deserve that.
Hey, but you still won.
I will be sitting at a nice dinner with Jen to
there
celebrate
you go.
That soon. Yeah.
Awesome.
Thanks. You so much.
You're welcome. Thank you. You know, it's funny. I had forgotten before I listened back to this because this was recorded maybe a month ago with Arwin here in the backyard. I had forgotten that this was supposed to be, we started this out, this was supposed to be like a 10-minute like intro to an episode, and it just like I enjoyed our chat so much that it just kept on going and going, man. So big thanks to Arwin Nix for making the trek up here to the backyard and sitting down and talking with me for a little bit under an hour. So that was great, man. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I also hope you guys enjoyed the music on this week's episode, the Coat Hangers. Remember, they are on tour right now. You can find out more at thecoathangers.com. Let's see. Coming up. Dates coming up. May 26th, the Fillmore in San Francisco. Bunch of California dates. Then they're heading to Tucson, Arizona at the Rialto Theater May 31st. And then on and on. And then they're going to end up in Seattle once again at the Suicide Squeeze Records 20th anniversary party on Thursday, August 25th. They're going to be joined by Guantanamo Baywatch, Childbirth Audacity at Numo's. And then on Friday, August 26th, Suicide Squeeze is continuing to celebrate with Minus the Bear, This Will Destroy You, 6 Part 7. And many more special guests at Neptune. So get your tickets. Go to suicidesqueezerecords.com for tickets to that, okay? Let's see. Arwen. You can find more about Arwen on the Sub Pop podcast, which can be found at Sub Pop FM. They do seasons. So they are currently working on season 2. And they've got all these great episodes that you can listen to. Let's see. I think all 10? 10 and a half? Or, yeah, it's like 11. They called the last episode 10.5, but it's like 11 episodes. So go to subpop.fm and check that out. Okay, thank you guys so much for listening. Remember, we are going to be taking 2 weeks off ourselves just to kind of regroup and get ready for episode 300 of the Air Raid podcast. We're going to go out this week. I'm very excited, by the way. I'm very excited for episode 300. It's going to be great. It's going to be fantastic, man. We have been on... Oh, man. We have been on the fake radio airwaves for, what, going on 7 years now? 7 years, I think. Yeah. As I pointed out in the beginning of the episode, I really don't know how to count years. So, yeah. Maybe 6 years. I don't know. Okay. Let's do this, shall we? The Coat Hangers off of their new album, Nosebleed Weekend. This song is called Perfume. It is fantastic. I highly recommend you guys buy this album. And we'll be back in about 2 weeks with episode 300 of the Air Raid podcast for your ears. Thank you so much for listening this week, everybody. We'll see you soon. Bye.